Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an accomplished professional, a fellow podcast host and author from Colorado, USA, Mr. Srinivas Rao. Srinivas, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Srinivas is the host of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, and he's an author. And we'll talk about both these during our conversation. So before we start, tell me about your journey in brief.
Yeah, I mean, in brief, it basically is a journey that largely just hasn't gone according to plan. Mm-hmm. So I went to Berkeley as an undergrad. I had a lot of jobs working in sales at software companies, wasn't very good at most of them. So mm-hmm. I decided to go back to business school to try to do a reset on my career. And instead of resetting, I exploded my career because I graduated from in business school in 2009, which was a mm-hmm. terrible time to get out of any kind of yeah. school. Mm-hmm. So the timing was also in a lot of ways serendipitous because of the fact that I also that the summer prior I had been the social media intern at Intuit. I didn't get an offer, but that ended up being actually quite influential because I had nothing to do. I needed a way to pass the time. When I finished school. So I started my first blog just both as a way to pass the time and as a way to stand out in the job market, not realizing where it would lead and kind of the path it would lead down. And I was in an online course, and one of the lessons in that course was to interview somebody as a way to get traffic to your website. Mm-hmm. And so I, rather than just interviewing one person, decided that I would just turn it into a weekly series. Mm-hmm. And after about 13 interviews, I emailed the 13th guest that I interviewed and said, "Hey, I'm thinking about starting a multi-author blog. Would you be interested in being a contributor?" And he said, "No." He said, "You're not even a good writer," more or less, not in those exact words. But he actually said, he's like, "Oh, but I think you're an exceptional interviewer and you should take it out and spin it out into a separate site." Mm-hmm. And I thought it was a good idea. So an hour later, with my limited WordPress and design skills, I mocked up a version of a website called Blogcast FM, sent it to him. And I said, "Is this what you had in mind? Letting me know when you want to get started." And he's, jokes. He's like, and then I was basically brought into your reality distortion field. He said, "I had no intention of ever having you do all this, doing all this work with you." But he said, it's like, "I just made a suggestion and you basically put me to work on helping you execute that suggestion." Mm-hmm. And so, we started out as a podcast for bloggers, but about 3 years in, I kind of began to see that this was not very interesting to me. Like my favorite interviews were all ones that had great stories. So we rebranded as the Unmistakable Creative. That was at the start of 2014. And I think at this point, we probably had 1300 guests from every walk of life imaginable: bank robbers, drug dealers, performance psychologists, authors, entrepreneurs, like from bank robbers to billionaires. Like, I've talked to everybody you could possibly imagine. As a byproduct of that, I've ended up doing a bit of speaking as well as writing a couple of books. And as of late, my sort of most recent endeavor is a YouTube channel called Maximize Your Output, where I'm basically using AI tools and networked knowledge management tools. Because for me, largely, that was something I started to organize the information I had to deal with for Unmistakable Creative, because it was substantial. And the amount of information we're all dealing with daily is not decreasing, it's increasing. And the tools that we've made are not really designed to accommodate that. So when I started kind of understanding this idea of network thinking, I finally realized that, okay, this is actually the solution to my problem, which turned out to be a business in and of itself. So that's kind of the brief version.
And what an amazing journey, and more power to you with your podcast. So my first question to you is, how do you select your guests? And you told me it's from, the bank robber to the billionaire or something like that.
Yeah, this is one of those things that drives people who want to be guests on my show absolutely insane. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, well, my primary criteria is personal curiosity. And I was like, there's literally nothing you can do to game that if I'm interested. So I've never made how well known somebody is a criteria for how I pick guests, because I made that mistake once with somebody who tried to negotiate with me on the length of time. When I said, "Okay, listen, I'm like, our show is an hour," and this woman was the assistant to a very famous author and said, "Oh, he'll provide more value in 30 minutes than all your guests have in an hour." And I was like, "How would you know? You've never even heard my show." That's kind of a presumptuous. And I did. I compromised, and he didn't provide more value. So from that point forward, I don't negotiate with any podcast guests. Like, we will turn down very famous people. Mm-hmm. Our standards are pretty much not like the joke is, I was like, the United States doesn't negotiate with terrorists. The unmistakable creative doesn't negotiate with publicists or podcast guests.
Well said. Well said. You seem to be saying exactly what I tell a lot of people. My podcasts are 25 minutes long. And when people say we can't get do justice for 25 minutes, then I say, well, then find someone who's much longer.
Yeah. I won't take and I'm kind of the exact opposite, right? I'm like, okay, I can't do justice to the story in less than an hour. So if you're not going to give me an hour, then fine.
Well said. So my next question for you is that, can you talk to me about a time when an interview changed your perspective on a topic?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, like the entire, you know, ethos of Unmistakable Creative has changed my perspective. But in fact, I think the really good place to start is with people who've been incarcerated. I think that one of the things that's really interesting when you talk to people who've been incarcerated is you get the sort of reality versus what we see on TV and media and the movies. Because, of course, a lot of that stuff is real. Like nobody, you know, prison is one of those bizarre, like really fascinating subcultures that I think everybody is curious about. Nobody wants to experience firsthand. Like, it's like, I want to learn about this. But, you know, we had a podcast guest named Chris Redlitz, who's a venture capitalist who started an incubator inside of San Quentin Prison, which is a maximum security facility here in California. And so I went to San Quentin with him to go meet these guys. And I'm sitting here thinking, I'm like, wow, I'm shaking hands with murderers. This is crazy. And I remember I met one guy, and one of my first book had just come out. So they'd sent copies to some of them, and the guy read it and he loved it. And I'm sitting here talking to this guy. I was like, what are you in here for? You don't seem like a guy who belongs in prison. He was like, I used to be a traitor on the outside. And I got into a confrontation and I shot a guy. And funny enough, he's on my visiting list. And I'm thinking to myself, like, you shot a guy? You don't seem like a type of person who would shoot a guy. So I think that one of the things that I've really become hyper aware of is the role that context plays in where people end up and how they end up, right? You know, I mean, you're of Indian descent. So like, there's a long time I kind of thought, you know, that my parents are giving us advice that's narrow-minded and it's all, you know, do something practical, do secure. But the more I kind of started to think about it from the context that they grew up in, I was like, okay, this makes sense. You know, they went to school in India, and, you know, they grew up in India. Like, you know, my dad's, like, I was born in 1978, so do the math. But at that time, life outcomes were pretty binary. The upward mobility wasn't there. And even today, like, you still, like, when you get born into a certain social class, yes, it's possible to overcome it, but not like it is here in the United States. So suddenly I realized that context matters a lot.
Yeah.
So in all reality, like, I think that, you know, almost every interview has kind of changed my perspective on a lot of things. Incarcerated people really, you know, are great. But I think that talking to as many people as I have has made me aware of my own biases. And I'm hyped. Like, the funny thing about biases is that you can be aware of them, you can know them, and you're still susceptible to them.
Very well said. Thank you. Great response. My next question is, Srinivas, you have a very, very wide range of topics.
Yeah.
How do you prepare for your interviews, and how do you maintain authenticity while exploring such diverse areas?
Yeah, I mean, so here's the funny thing is that preparation is like this double-edged sword, right? One of my rules is, no matter who the guest is, if they have a book, I will always read the book. Like, that's just kind of a given. I learned that from Rob Bell, who'd been on tour with Oprah, and I asked him, I was like, what did you learn from her? And he said, he was like, the thing about the books, that's not an act. He was like, that's real. I was like, fine, that's good enough. I can, if that's the case, if that works for Oprah, so be it. So that's a big one. That always gives you a good scaffolding. But other than that, to be honest, I don't do a lot of preparation.
Okay.
I actually just read somebody's about page, because I think, to me, like, I don't like to prepare questions in advance. Like, I know how I'm going to start and how I'm going to end. And I think that's what leads to a very natural conversational flow. It also forces you to listen a lot more closely when you don't have questions prepared. And I learned that, like, just from my own experience. And then I remember hearing Cal Fussman talk to Tim Ferriss. And Cal Fussman has interviewed everybody from, like, world leaders to famous athletes. And when I heard the story about him interviewing Gorbachev, where he thought he was going to have an hour, he only had 15 minutes, he asked, like, this very open-ended question that ended up leading to an hour conversation. Like, so I think the key is the right questions. And then I just let my guests talk. So like, to me, the interview itself is a process of discovery.
Yeah.
Now, as far as preparation, like I said, if somebody has written a book, I read the book in detail. Most of my guests are always kind of stunned by how closely I've read the book. They're like, you read the book. And I was like, why would I not read the book? And it's mind-boggling. There are a lot of podcast hosts who don't read the books of the people they interview. Especially when they're going to be talking about the book, they literally just take the galley letter that, you know, the publicist sends them and they just ask questions off of that. And like, they'll say that, like, guess what? Like, you can clearly tell when somebody has not read the book. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, probably read the book, you know, look at the about page, see if I can find anything interesting. I might watch a TED talk, but beyond that, I don't listen to other interviews they've done on purpose. I don't want to say, because I don't want to say, that's one key to it, right? Funny enough, I don't listen to podcasts. Like, I very rarely listen to podcasts. They're my least preferred form of media. So that in a way kind of becomes an advantage. Or I don't listen to podcasts from sort of the entrepreneurial ecosystem. I try to listen to podcasts that have nothing to do with my work, if I do listen at all. Yeah. So that's kind of the gist of it. Yeah.
Fascinating. So one more question relating to your podcast, and then I want to move to your books. What would you say has been some of the most challenging interview that you have done, and what made it so?
Okay. So there are a couple. I'm a person who doesn't tolerate difficult guests. Like, I will cut interviews off in the middle of them if I don't like how it's going. Like, literally, I will just stop and tell the guest, this is boring. I'm like, I think you're not going to. So one of the ways I frame it properly, I tell the guests, I'm like, hey, look, you know, I think you have a great story, but like, I can spot it when people have been on book tours and they've been media trained. And so they're talking in sound bites. And I was like, that's not going to work for what I need. And I'll have them go back and listen to an interview and they'll come back. Sometimes they'll say, yeah, that's amazing. Like, I can see why you want to do this. And I'm glad you forced it on me. There are others who told me to go to hell, and you know, that's fine. And I said, well, that's okay. Our podcast is probably not for you. Somebody asked me, like, well, you know, who's the guest that intimidates you most? And funny enough, it's still Seth Godin, because with Seth, like, he's so smart and he's said so many things to try to get something original out of him. He's always good. But the thing is that if you're trying to get something thought provoking and insightful that hasn't been said before, you really have to be on your game with Seth. Like, in general, if you're going to do any kind of work with him, you have to be on the ball. He's not really, you know, tolerant. So of like, you know, people who are not prepped or like, you know, so he's very, very sharp. And I mean, think about it. This is a guy who's literally published a blog post every day for over 20 years at this point, I think. Like, if there's not a blog post on Seth Godin's blog tomorrow, you know, something horrible happened. And chances are, even if that's the case, he has a backup plan. Like, you know, like, the day Seth doesn't post is going to be like, wait, what happened? You know?
Well said. So let's now talk about your books. Your books often explore the intersection of creativity and personal development.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Help me a little bit about to understand your books, and why do you think this intersection interests you?
Well, it's funny because I don't like people like, you know, this whole follow your passion idea, which I personally think is nonsensical, because I think that it's not something you follow. It's something you discover by paying attention to what you find engaging. So in a lot of ways, it wasn't because it was interesting to me. It was what emerged organically from my own efforts. As far as the intersection goes, I think that like I've been critical, and it's funny because I bet if I went back now and read my own books, there are things that I've written that I may not necessarily agree with anymore. Which is a sign that like perspective changes. You know, even from my own books, which are in at this point ink and like on printed paper, there are probably things I would go back and say, okay, you know what, this is nuanced. I don't believe this is true. But you can't also, you don't want to come from a wishy-washy place when you write books. So so they really emerged organically. I mean, part of what drove the perspective, ironically, it came back to the very beginning of my journey as a blogger, because when I started, I saw this girl start this project called Twitter Should Hire Me, which was really successful. And I tried to copy it. I came up with this website called 100 Reasons You Should Hire Me, and it was a total flop. I couldn't even come up with 100 reasons why anybody should hire me. So the thing that ended up happening was I started to see that pattern of somebody would see another successful person and they would try to just mimic what that person did. And then they would be stunned that they weren't getting the same results. And I saw that enough times that it kind of annoyed me. And I remember one of my friends said, there's a great creative potential in what makes you angry. Mm. And that made me angry because I thought, like, people are robbing themselves and the world of their gifts. And so I thought, you know what, there's got to be a better way to do this. And I think I know what it is. And so that's where the ethos of Unmistakable, like my friend Mars Dorian really deserves credit for it, but he said, he was like, I want to create things that are so distinctive that, like, you can see it and you know it's mine. Mm. And I, you know, I took that idea and I built a brand around that entire ethos, which eventually became, you know, we started with the Art of Unmistakable, Art of Being Unmistakable, which is a self-published book. And then as we're thinking, like, what are we going to rename the show? We went through probably 200 names. And, you know, my mentor was like, okay, Unmistakable Creative. And I was like, that's it. He said, go buy the domain now. And that's how it came about. So it ended up being just sort of organic, and it emerged from a combination of my own interests and, like, the conversations I was having on the podcast. So I it's hard to say that, you know, that was just something I zeroed in on. It was like, hey, this is what I'm going to explore as the intersection. I think that people too often get caught up on that. It's like, oh, what is my purpose, my why, my mission? It's like, go do something, then you'll figure it out. Because so many of these things reveal themselves. It's about, you've started multiple businesses, like, you know this. There's idiosyncrasies that express themselves in reality that no matter how many scenarios you plan out, you can't anticipate. Mm. You know, like, an ironic twist of fate, or, you know, the universe having a sense of humor. When people would ask me what I was going to do when I got out of business school, I was like, I don't know. I just know it's not going to have anything to do with the internet.
Mm, well said. And Srivas, your writing often challenges status quo.
Yeah.
That's true. Can you share a piece of advice for those afraid to pursue unconventional paths like you have done?
Yeah, I'll tell you what it is. And I think that the funny thing is, like, for two Indians to be talking about that is fitting, right? Because nobody's more conditioned to, like, maintain the status quo than Indians. Absolutely. Like, we're, our cultural programming is so strong and deeply embedded.
Yeah.
But what I would say to that is just one simple phrase, and that is that all these people who give you input, like, none of them are going to live with the consequences of your decisions, only you are. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, that's what it comes down to. So, you know, you got to think about that. Yeah, and again, like, this is nuanced. Context matters here, right? Mm-hmm. But if you are going to do that, you have to be okay with the fact that you're probably going to make some people angry. There are going to be people who disapprove, but none of them are going to live with the consequences of your decisions or actions or choices.
Very interesting. And what role does storytelling play in your books? And why do you think it's an effective tool to convey ideas?
Well, I mean, storytelling is an incredibly effective tool to convey ideas because of the fact that humans are wired to listen to stories. You know, like, when somebody starts telling a story, you can't stop listening. It's very difficult to not. I mean, I learned that from my own podcast, which is why the way I frame my questions, at least my opening, is that nobody can answer that question without telling me a story. Mm. And so it kind of is set up that way. And what I realized is, like, wow, you can't help but, like, pay attention. It's why we love TV, why we love movies. And if we can take that, you know, and apply it to books, we're going to create more engaging content, right? Because the thing is that, like, nobody wants to listen to read a list of facts. That's pretty mind-numbing. That's not a book. That's a research paper. And that's just not very engaging or intellectual. It's not stimulating for the mind. So that's why I think stories are really important. I mean, stories add the entertainment layer to whatever form of education we're trying to offer.
Mm. Well said. And how has the digital era influenced your writing and the topics you choose to explore?
Yeah, so the thing is, I'm kind of a digital native, but I'm one of those weird digital natives because I'm right on that sort of borderline between millennial and, like, the time right before, because I was born in 1978. Mm-hmm. So I was in college as all this stuff was being invented. Like, literally, you know, I think Google was founded when I was in college. I remember I used Google when it was at google.stanford.edu. So in a lot of ways, I'm kind of a native of the digital era. And I think that there are pros and cons to that, right? One is the fact that there is opportunity like never before. The con is that there's also distractions and, like, completely irrelevant nonsense like never before. Mm. And if you combine those two things together, then you get this, you know, bizarre combo. But, like, the funny thing is, part of why I rebranded the show was at the beginning, like, our show was about blogging. And I realized, I was like, I don't want to focus on... I'll tell you what it made me think about was, like, to not look at what is trendy, but to consider like, what do you do to make something, like, how do you focus on doing things that are timeless? That was, I think, for me, the biggest impact on being a sort of digital native was, okay, I want to do something that transcends the technology, that transcends the time we're in, and that will matter long after I'm gone. And I think that that was really important. Nobody's ever asked me that before, funny enough. Like, but yeah, I think that that's the way I would put it. Because I've talked to a lot of journalists and authors who predate sort of social media, digital era. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed that the way they write is very different. They haven't lost their ability to do things with depth. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think a lot of people who are digital natives, like, we've had to go like really far out of the way. We've had to go do things like invent distraction blockers.
Well said. Well said. So, Srinath, I've got time for two more questions for you. Yeah. Your work also involves a lot of self-reflection.
Yeah.
How do you practice self-reflection, and how does it influence your writing?
Well, okay. So I think the meditation piece of this is important, but for me, that meditation ends up being a physical meditation. So like, I surf and snowboard, like, literally today I canceled every meeting I had this week except yours because you're in India. I was like, okay, cool. This is, I'm literally going to go to the mountain and snowboard for the rest of the day today. So for me, it's always been time in nature. I think that that disconnect is really important, because when you have that disconnect, then you end up, you know, it just engages a very different part of the mind. So that's been huge. Like, for me, action sports are really meditative. Like, I find them to be very calming, which is weird, right? Because they look like these very intense things, but you get out of these environments and you're just in a very different mood. Like, you think differently. You also access a part of the mind. Like, many of my creative breakthroughs have come from these times when I'm not in front of a computer, which is not surprising at all. But yeah.
Very interesting. And my last question to you, you encourage readers to find their unique path.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for someone still searching for their, in inverted commas, unmistakable calling?
Yeah, I think that this kind of takes us, you know, like, you know, in a lot of ways, unmistakable becomes a passion, a synonym for what you're passionate about, right? But what is it that, like, you uniquely are passionate about? Not what everybody says you should be passionate about, not what, like, some stupid blogger or even me says is a good idea. So there are two things I would say about this. One is that I think that this was by far the most useful advice I got. People ask me, am I passionate about podcasting? And I said, no, I'm like, I don't listen to podcasts. I was never passionate about interviewing. What I realized, and you know, it's funny because, like, what I was, you know, what I found myself doing is I would have an experience and then I would interview somebody who would validate that experience with research. So Tina Seelig, who's a professor at Stanford, said passion follows engagement. And I think the key really is to pay attention to what it is you find engaging, and then give it long enough to see if you can get some sort of a result. Like, that's a tough one for most people. They can't stick with something long enough to actually see if it's going to generate a result. Yeah. And sometimes that means a year at a minimum, you know, a year minimum, like, kind of seeing where things are going and, you know, pushing, but also be willing to change course when something isn't working. So yeah, it's funny because I think that, like, when we think about prescriptive advice, we always want the neatly packaged, you know, hey, this is, do this, this, and this will happen. Whereas in reality, it's more like, do this, this, multiply it times the fact that you're a human being, and it'll screw up the result at the end. Like, this won't happen. Something wildly unexpected will happen. Mm-hmm. And there's no way to predict that unless you do this, 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 and that.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Yeah. Srinivas, on that note, I just want to say thank you so much for talking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for talking to me about the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. I think I'm also a podcaster, but I learned many, many interesting new things from you today. I love the way you tackle diversity in your subjects so easily, and you keep moving from one topic to another with your different guests. Thank you also for talking to me about the advantages of a 1-hour podcast. And I was quite fascinated when you told me that if you're not enjoying the podcast, you just cut the podcast. Thank you also for speaking to me about your books and so many different aspects of what goes into writing the book and your own philosophies when you write these books. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast.
platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for the brand called You.